So, okay. Welcome everybody. We'll call the meeting to order. A little bit of an update. I have not been able to connect back with Kelly Turo from the DEC, but we're sort of playing phone tag with each other. So I'm hoping, it sounds like she's still planning on trying to come. It was just, she was still uncertain as to whether it would be next meeting or the meeting after. So I'll hopefully have an answer from her next week early.
If she can't get here, is she willing to review the document?
We didn't go there because she seemed to think that she would get here.
Okay.
It was just a matter of this week I called her and then she called me back and we just keep missing each other. So, but her voicemail message said still working on trying to figure which date is better.
Right. And if we could get Dave Pollock, that would
She was going to reach out to him and have him come. And that's, I think that's part of why she's trying to get her team's schedule to figure out which day is best.
Amanda, who wrote Beyond Waste?
Who wrote it?
Yeah, I keep seeing him. He was a big burly guy with a beard and ponytail. What was his name? I was wondering if he still worked for the DEC, because he would be a good contact. Yeah. And I can't remember his name.
There is a gentleman who oversees like a division of waste diversion and other things for the DEC on the state level, not region level. He's going to be at this conference I'm going to Sunday through Wednesday of next week. Maybe worthwhile to see if Kelly wanted to bring him in as well, because he's looking at the statewide picture.
I'm hoping she and I will connect, and then on Monday and I can, because she said, she kept saying she wanted to put together her team to come, not just her. And so I'm assuming, well, she did specifically mention Dave.
Can we bring that gentleman that Mark mentioned in on the screen here? Like, would that be possible?
It's possible. Well, I don't know if we can bring him on the screen. We certainly can bring him in on the conference. I don't know if we can do a Zoom in.
Can we do a Zoom? I got to add that.
I was going to say we can do it at UCRA, so I think we can.
Yeah, I'm sure we can here. So, but I'll have more answers. Before the next meeting. Sorry, I didn't have better answers. Approval of the minutes. Thank you, Liz, and welcome back to Liz. She emailed the May 2nd meeting. Mm-hmm. Did anybody have any questions? Or if not, if we're ready to, I'd ask for a motion to approve those minutes.
I'll make a motion.
Thanks.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. We'll pass those around for signing. And then, so we left off, we were talking about the UCRA board, the number of members and the affiliation. So I want to sort of just back up 1 second. What I took from our discussion is the general consensus, and I know Jim did voice in a different opinion about the UCRA remaining a separate entity and not a department. Can I safely assume that we've discussed that at the length that we wanted to?
I do have a question, and I hate to put our deputy executive on the spot, but you didn't really weigh in on that. And I'm wondering what, from the executive's point of view, what, you know, what are your thoughts on the idea of taking up the RRA?
I don't think taking it on as a department solves any of the problems that we are looking at. So,
and I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit. I respect that. But the idea that an independent agency can encumber costs from the county, in the sense that you're on the hook for the net service fee, and we're going to be looking at tens of millions of dollars of bonding and spending. But you're comfortable with that.
I think that there was a firm rationale for going the route of a public benefit agency, right? Because this is bigger, harder decisions. And trying to, in some ways, insulate them from the day-to-day political, right? And kind of look at bigger picture that was, I believe, from everything I've read, part of the whole nexus for going with an agency, for going that route rather than having it in-house. So I think that, you know, we still, there's many levels to perhaps talking about why something like endpoint disposal hasn't happened. And I think going back to prior, I think there's been a lack of, from the state level down, as far as helping communities see that they need that as well. It's an all of the above approach. I think there's been, this is a tiny bit of a tangent, but it's the focus on reduction, going back to documents from the 90s from the state, is like, it's where it needs to be, big picture. However, the increase in packaging, in consumption, in production, it's just been, it's completely unweighted to the amount of more garbage, you know, MSW that we're producing. So I still think it needs to, we need to lean into that and kind of what, you know, the authority has always been envisioned to do and the role it's been envisioned to play in this. And again, going back to those documents that we had at one of the first meetings from, we're talking the 70s through the 80s, it's the same kind of diagnosis of the political scene, same thing. So,
well, would you, because my concern is that we're going to need county level clout to solve the problems and to do the sort of coordination that is going to be needed between towns and cities, especially in a place as big as Ulster County. The executive has a lot more clout than our executive director.
However, there's an explicit relationship between the legislature and the executive and OCRA. Last meeting, we spent the bulk of our time discussing what different board representation might be. Again, because there is a disconnect, because it's mainly legislative appointments to the board and it doesn't reflect like a municipal seat or and looking at different models of that. Rockland County has like
18 members
something on the board,
like,
and each each municipal chief elected officer is on the board. Mm. So there are a lot of different models to look at that, again, explicitly tie those things so that you're kind of integrating that both perspective and the kind of political willpower into the decision making of the board, and then echoing that with the legislature and, you know, giving up back its bonding authority to then make decisions. That's part of the short circuit that's happened there too. So.
And so then one more question, and thank you for, you know, for explaining this. Instead of a 20-year contract, what do you think of the idea of a 5 to 7 year contract to see how the new arrangement is working out and see how, because frankly, I don't know if you know what happened in Houston last night. I don't know if you see what's happened in Florida. Things are getting bad very quickly.
As far as climate change.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
I have to think about that one more. But I think that, you know, the realistic part of this is, you know, having worked on some part of the arc of the Oneida Herkimer permitting, that's a decade full out to site any kind of landfill in Ulster County. And it would be also something that's going to take a lot of political will and a lot of really thoughtful outreach and communication.
So county executive would be better at, perhaps, than an executive director.
But there's a, you know, when you look at the charge of the agency, there is a need for a body to focus on that. And again, these are issues that are not just, they touch municipalities, also legislative, executive. So I think just you know, we tend to talk about the executive being operational. You know, we're carrying these things out. There is a layer of, and again, this is why going back to the rationale for the creation of the agency around siting a landfill that is kind of beyond that, right? I mean, there are murals like depicting the defeat of the landfill proposal for the town of Saugerties that take up whole sides of a building, right? It's like if you had like lore and myth and song, right? That would be part of it.
And I have to say, I had part in making that happen. Well, thank you. So I don't necessarily agree with, but I respect that this is where we're going to go. And so, and I appreciate Mr. Chairman allowing us to continue that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I brought it up. I wanted to be sure I wasn't misunderstanding, but what I heard, and I think your points are valid, but I tend to agree with Amanda that having it be a separate entity that's focused solely on that and not caught up in everything else of the operation of the county, to me, makes a little bit more sense. I think the key is how the board is set up.
And I think we may have a minority opinion, but I'm looking at everything that's done operationally within the county becomes a political football. It can be the government operations center. It can be housing. So my concern again is now there is a good board who seems to be more open and progressive. However, in the past, there was a fight to listen to what the county wanted. Yeah. And as 23 representatives of the county, we were looking at zero waste and more waste reduction. And, basically there was pushback, so much so that we didn't even get any review, even though several of us had met with agency representatives. So I still like the idea of a hybrid. I like the idea of it falling in the county planning department, with a lot of support for the public authority as far as, operations go and perhaps even funding. And we are responsible for, the funding. If it's $100 million for a landfill, and something terrible happens, we are on the hook for it. Or minimally taking another look at the makeup of the agency board. So we'll make sure that there is complete representation and more of a push to get like-minded people on there. I mean, we have to look at waste reduction. We can't just look at siting a landfill for 150,000 tons of garbage. We can bring that down.
Well, we may not have 10 years also.
We don't have 10 years. We're done.
Sorry. It's like this is max volume.
Oh, no.
Should I put it on? What do you mean by a hybrid in planning? I don't understand that.
It's in the late 80s, it was required by the state that you either have a county solid waste planning division or an authority. But places, I think Rockland County, I think Purchase, the planning still falls within the county, and then the operations is taken on by an authority, if I'm not mistaken.
You have to have a local planning unit,
which isn't necessarily
the planning department, and the agency is the local planning unit.
And if you go to the DEC website, you can see region by region, they break out what's designated as the local solid waste management planning unit.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that a lot of times it is...
which falls within the county.
An agency, a county. But I think one of the things kind of a while back that I was starting to kind of poke into was, where and when do governments, municipal, a county, a group of counties, use a solid waste management agency versus when do they kind of operationalize it? And it's not, from what I've seen, and it wasn't like a deep dive because I couldn't really get the list, that most of the times, if it's just an operational decision, right, if they already have a burn plan, if they already have kind of, if they're exporting everything, then you might see it done as a, or if there's not flow control and you just kind of cut everybody loose to contract with the hauler and the hauler figures it out, then you see it as maybe, you know, within a planning department, within a department. But where you have either closed landfills that are still being maintained by a regional entity, or if you have an operational landfill, which there are still, you know, there's still permitted facilities across the state, that's when it's you're more likely to see an agency. So, you know, and that just, if you were to go into the NYSWANA membership, I think you can kind of, that was another reason for looking at, okay, who's designated as the solid waste management planning unit for the municipality, too. So I think there's a little bit, it's not consistent completely, but you definitely see a trend there.
And I think, too, by the legislative body of the county, meaning our legislature, having the ability to create laws that will direct in a lot of degree how the unit, the agency operates, things like flow control and the laws that were made about food waste and things like that. So in a way, it's not a department, but there is an affiliation with the county, that the county is somewhat controlling the overarching direction that it's still going. My personal feeling is that by making it a separate agency, you depoliticize it, because now it's not a Republican Democrat thing, because waste is not Republican or Democrat, but there's a lot of people that probably want to make it based on people's personal thoughts on climate change and greenhouse gases and all that. And maybe, in my view, having a separate agency eliminates some of that politicalness of it, whereas the legislature still has, and the county still has, an input in it, in how they create the laws, and the laws direct the operation, and the contract, too, for that matter. But I like your idea of going to a 5-year or a 7-year max contract to the whatever the first one was, the 20-some years, was at the time probably made sense. Let me catch Laura and then.
I started work at the agency in 1989 as a secretary, and it was very political, and it was a majority of Republican appointees, and I'd have to say many of them, with except maybe Betsy Jordan, didn't even have a solid waste background.
Right.
So, you know, again, it's a great board right now. And if we could keep them on in perpetuity, you know, things would work out perfect. But it's kind of like any other position, as people leave. So, you know, I'm looking towards a future. You know, and I mean, it can be very political. I mean, that's why, you know, legislators as politicians appoint certain people.
Understood.
It's to bring forward, you know, whatever their goal.
Gracie.
Sorry, I'm trying. I think that the idea of going with a 5 to 7 year contract is kind of counterintuitive to a long-term plan. It, you know, it sends a message that there isn't confidence in the agency. And I think what we really need is to make a decision about what we're going to do and move in that direction. I worry that if we say, okay, we'll just do a 5-year while we continue to figure it out, it's 5 wasted years. I think the urgency you're talking about is real. We're not going to be able to address anything urgently with a 5-year contract. It's going to be gone in a blip while we're trying to make plans.
So
it's an escape clause.
Yeah, so if the board doesn't mind, I'm just going to say that again.
Let me just say one more thing about it.
Okay.
Maybe in that kind of contract, if there was an escape clause, where things happen, the executive could say, okay, you know, I now have, maybe it's declare a state of emergency, something drastic.
Yeah,
but I'm just a little worried that the coordination that we might need in the event an emergency is we'll have two agencies.
I just wanted to repeat what Tracy said for the tape.
Oh,
that's
sorry.
All.
Okay.
That's
sorry
all I was trying
sorry,
to do.
Sorry,
because, no, that's all.
We should move it down.
Yeah, I don't even know if that would pick up, and it's okay. But what Tracy Bartels was saying was that a 5 to 7 year contract would be counterintuitive to the to the bigger plan. So, right. Apologies.
And, no, it's okay. Yeah. No apologies for interrupting. And that's a, yeah. That's a good point. It's
yeah.
a good point.
Yeah. No, it is a very good point. One I hadn't considered. Well, with that, that's kind of a great segue into how we feel the board should be made up if the, if this becomes our ultimate recommendation. So, if anyone has an opinion that wants to start out, if not, I gave it a little thought this morning, although out of this conversation here, maybe I've tweaked a little bit, but I think we had talked that anything more than, you know, 9 is kind of unwieldy, but it's hearing Amanda's 18 and, you know,
Amen.
Sitting on the county planning board, which has 23 members when I talked, or excuse me, 25 members, when I talked to other planning boards from other counties, they're like, you have 25 members, but it works. Yeah. So it can work. So maybe, maybe it should be bigger. But with thinking of 7, you know, what came up in my head, and this is just throwing it out for discussion purposes, I'm not sure how I feel about it one way or the other, is if there were 3 members appointed by the legislature, one would be the chair of the legislature, one would be the minority party, and one would be the majority party. There would be 2 appointees from the executive's office, so now you're up to 5. It would be an appointee from the Supervisors Association. Mm-hmm. And what I would say is the 7th member, if we went with 7, would be an appointee from the UCRA executive. I feel like the UCRA should sort of have a say in it. I knew it was going to be, you know, I agree with moving away from the fact of having a hauler sitting on there. But I think having the UCRA executive and the staff make an appointment there, the staff meaning the officers of the you know, the director and their direct staff, I think it adds something. You know, it's different, I know, but I'm afraid that if we just assume that that they're going to appoint somebody who's going to put up a fight, you know, they're going to be 1 of 7. I'm just playing devil's advocate that having somebody there representing them on the board may not be such a bad thing. Yeah.
The board hires the exec, and the agents, the employees work for the board indirectly. Like it's such a conflict.
It's like
it's a total head starter.
Well, yeah. I agree. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's illegal too under the ABO. I might be wrong.
Okay,
I think
and maybe it is. I didn't do any research on it.
I just want to update on Manna. So Manna is not able to make it today. I think she didn't have the change in the calendar. But
okay, thank you.
Can I add something to
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Just so, and maybe this was brought up. Sorry, I had to step out.
He just said it's illegal.
But it may not. I mean, I don't know if it's illegal, but it's a conflict as mm-hmm. the board oversees directly me and then through me the rest of the staff. So well,
great minds think alike.
Well, then maybe the 7th person should be like an at-large person. But my sort of thinking is that there should be some not just government-related representative on there. Let me get Laura.
You
want
to go ahead? Yeah. Okay. So the majority-minority appointments are in effect. There's 1 minority and there's 4 majority. So you're talking about increasing it to 3 for the minority and
no, I'm saying what I and this is just a suggestion. It was 3 from the legislature, one from the chair directly,
okay.
1 from the minority party, 1 from the majority
okay.
party, then 2 from the county executive's office, 1 from the supervisors, and then a 7th seat, which you know, however that is filled.
Okay.
That's just a starting opinion. I haven't given a lot of thought. I was trying to get us started in the conversation. I mean, I'm open to any other suggestions.
Well,
let me get Tracy and then.
Okay. I know I advocated for the minority appointment last time, but we also came full circle with that being the problem of the changing minorities.
Mm-hmm.
The back and forth, that's been the
Well, I would, a couple of things. Tracy makes some good points, but before I get to them, I think Kingston might well be represented, you know, because it is our largest minute. And I'm just thinking, that's off the top of my head. I haven't researched.
That would be an interesting number, seventh in my proposal. Right. Yeah.
So that's just a thought off the top of my head. But also, Anna Rapolo, who was the executive director, or acting executive director before we brought Mark on, was the executive director of Rockland County. And she alluded to me that it was something of a nightmare having an 18-person board because, you know, it was just nuts. So she navigated it, but, you know, I made a joke about it, and she was like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So we could, I think, I could reach out to her and find out what she, you know, if she has thoughts on that.
Yeah.
And I'd be happy to do that. We have a good relationship. But my sense is that anything above, you know, 7 or 9 members is kind of a nightmare. As to Tracy's point, I think she's spot on, you know, do electeds serve or not? And there's pros and cons. I don't have a single answer. I want to hear what the committee says. The reason I think it's a good idea is because then you get less of the sort of public posturing that we had in relation to the leaked landfill non-study that became ridiculously hot potato for no reason because it wasn't even under consideration. And yet, it, you know, people postured on it. And I'm worried that if we have politicians on the RRA board that it might turn it into the same reason they don't have cameras in courtrooms sometimes. You know, you don't necessarily want politicians on a deliberative body that is supposed to be non-political. On the other hand, Tracy and I use the term skin in the game. You know, it's easy to throw rocks when you're not involved in doing it. So I don't know what the answer is, but that's how I see the balance.
So one thought I gave to what Tracy was talking about with the minority-majority, one way around it, and I know this will not necessarily be... let me backtrack. It's very different from what we do now. What I would say a way around that is you make it a 2-year term that everybody moves off. Now, I know the continuity of having ongoing, but that eliminates the majority-minority thing, because if it's a 2-year term, it's the same term as the legislature. It's the same term as many supervisors. So as you get turnover of...
You're saying all members
just
at the same time.
New ones.
Right. Yeah, that would be one way. Now I realize that's very different from how it's happening. I didn't weigh the pros and cons. The only thing in my head I said that would address the minority-majority issue. It may be totally the wrong way to go, but it's a solution to that. You know, and I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other if it's a good or bad thing. I just say it would be one way to solve the minority-majority issue.
Can I just ask a question on that and then make a quick statement depending on? So are you saying that there's like a term limit of only one?
No, I'm not saying term limit. I'm just saying the appointment is every 2 years.
I gotcha.
The same person
right
could
now
be reappointed.
It's every 3.
Yeah.
But you're just shrinking it to 2.
No, he's saying all at once.
I'm saying all members at one time.
Right.
That coincide with the legislature's election cycle.
My only concern is that you're asking the board to make very long-term decisions.
Agreed.
And if there was full change in the middle of a process,
yep.
Not that this couldn't happen now, but there's at least a little continuity and members that have been on can explain if the whole board would turn over.
And as I said, I know there's pros and cons to it, but that would eliminate the political issue.
Right.
Of the minority majority, which has been a big issue.
One.
I've come around. I'm done on a minority appointment because we're a democratic body, and I don't mean big D, I mean small D. Mm-hmm. And you know, the majority rules, and if there's an appointment that's a problem, that's an issue. Would get voted down. You know, there are tons of votes in this body that happen across party lines. But the problem was trying to track minority, majority, minority, majority.
Right.
And also, it's not really representative. If, let's say, the Dems had only 3 seats out of 23, why would they get one appointment? That's like not, It's not really representative of the majority of the county. So I just think we go with legislative appointments.
And I'm fine with that. I was trying to think of trying to resolve the problems that have appeared over the years, but I would say just three appointments then from the legislature. Yeah, so.
And I would endorse the idea of giving the executive the appointment power without legislative approval, just because otherwise it's not really an executive appointment, it's an executive recommendation.
And well, not exactly, but I'm okay with it going directly.
Yeah. I'm curious what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, the executive appoint heads of departments, which are executive.
Oh, okay.
They're confirmed.
But that's the same thing.
Yeah,
said.
Yeah. I mean, but okay. Yeah, it is. But it's like the executive has an appointment if it says that in the contract or the whatever document, and then there's a name. She writes a letter, just gets sent over to Ledge. So it's kind of pro forma after the name goes down.
Okay. And it would be similar for the supervisors, because the supervisor's appointment should be that body's vote for that person. And currently, they do go through a confirmation by the legislature. And to my knowledge, like Tracy said last meeting, I don't know that any supervisor's appointee to a committee has ever been rejected. And as she pointed out, it was only, I think, once or maybe twice that an executive's appointee was questioned. So, the fear that the legislature wouldn't move that person forward is not necessarily, it could happen, but it's not necessarily founded.
The argument for having confirmation by the legislature, I mean, let me back up. Historically, it so rarely happened.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Very, very, very difficult thing.
How would you feel about a supermajority to overturn the executive or the supervisors association recommendation? Because that would at least say that it would put a little bit of the onus on the legislature to really prove that that person. Because I hear you that it hasn't happened, but we also know that 23 people. Yeah.
Well, the concern I have is that we've been, if I remember correctly, we've always had a Democratic executive and a Democratic-led legislature since we've had executives.
No.
Oh, no?
No.
Okay, all right, good.
No, the Republican.
Oh, right, okay, good. All right, good. Well, that reassures me then.
Terry Bernardo.
Okay, good. Well, if it's been that cooperative, then that's good. I'm reassured about that.
But the supermajority, if it is indeed going to sail through, then the supermajority wouldn't stop it, but it would be a little bit of a check and balance to say that to the legislature, you've got to go down and get two-thirds or majority plus one. I'm not even saying two-thirds, I'm saying supermajority.
I mean, my quick instinct, which it's so hard to talk, that I don't know if it's affecting.
Yeah. True. Well, no, I was saying a supermajority just to overrule it, not to confirm it, if as long as it's confirmed. But for, and the reason I use that as an example is, in state law, under planning, when the county planning board makes a required modification to a municipal government, the municipal government can accept it with a majority vote, but if they choose to not accept it, they have to have a majority plus one, a supermajority, to overrule it. And that's where my mind was thinking, is in the overruling, not in the approval part. So, and it certainly must be legal if it's legal in that.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's actually, because it gives added weight to the, you know, to, yeah, it just gives added impetus to the executive and the supervisors, you know.
Right. It's just a thought. I mean, I'm just throwing it out for consideration. I'm not necessarily, it's just where my brain is headed, so.
If you ever, like, one way to have legislators on it, other than, and then have the legislature have at-large appointments, would be that the chair and the deputy chair of the Environment and Energy Committee sat on the board. Something like that would be, no.
I don't know.
But that would be, like, not in officio, but they would be by title, right? And that's the, that is the committee that the agency reports to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's how we capture the legislature on the USITA board?
On USITA is by economic development, so then you could still have like three at-large bids, the supervisors.
And USITA is the chair and the vice chair?
Chair and the vice chair.
Yeah.
So.
And that usually would settle the majority-minority, because usually if one is from one party, the other is traditionally the other party. Yeah. Nothing is set in stone, because those are appointments by the chair. So that's the only downside to that, is those are the chair's appointments, so you're talking essentially one person. But.
My other concern is that those folks go to a lot of meetings already.
Yeah.
And this is going to, you know, as we move through this, it's relatively calm at the moment. And just to put a plug in, we got a great letter from the DEC. They inspected our facilities. Not a letter per se, but a great report. They loved what we're doing in terms of, you know, but what we're doing is the easy part right now. We're sending it far away.
Right.
The hard part is what we're trying to figure out here.
Yeah, right.
And it's going to get more difficult over the next few years. So if we have people who already have a lot of meetings trying to come to more meetings, that is just, you know, I'm not sure it's realistic for those people to take it on.
You remember the 8-hour meetings that went until 4 o'clock in the morning? Pitchforks and, yeah. It was
how would people feel if those appointments could be either or? They could be a sitting legislator, or they could be an outside person. And then that leaves it up to the body or the chair, depending on who's making the appointment, to decide. If you have one legislator who's very, very engaged and wants to do that, then they will lobby to be that. But I think the Supervisors Association position should be either a supervisor or the body's designee. And that's from, you know, a supervisor who knows that it's a 60-hour-a-week job. So,
right.
Yeah. But I think, you know, you're going to have people either engaged or not engaged. And you know, I don't think we should limit it just because it's a lot of work. If somebody wants to take on that work, they should be able to. So, and I just threw my suggestion out as a starter for a discussion. If ever other people have other suggestions, please.
Is it possible to get, like, a membership list from, like, NYSWANA or something, so we could have a list of the, you know, departments or agencies that are doing this across the state, and then we could just poke away at pulling the board makeup and membership? Because I just feel like, you know, we're talking, like, 5 or 7, and then you bring up, you know, if we bring up, like, that Rockland is like 16 or 18, it really changes the discussion. So I think it would be.
Well, I don't know how an even number board works anyway. So.
Yeah. Well, it's what, you know, you need to look at different what's out there.
I guess then the executive director would have a
membership.
What is it called?
I don't know. There's got to be something in there. Either that or it just doesn't happen if it's a tie.
I don't mind kind of picking at it.
I can look online at the various counties that have. Do we know which counties have a separate agency?
This is what I was just asking Mark for, which was the list from, there's an association of solid waste management agencies, departments. Okay. Get the membership list. But what I would like to, you know, if we can put it at least in a Google Doc, because I don't mind kind of chipping away at it with other folks, because like here you are, you know, you can go right to Oneida Herkimer.
And yeah, well, I can, their board. If you give me that list, I've got time, I can go to each website, and I'm sure the makeup of the board is
on the website.
On the websites somewhere. So if you can get me that list,
I'll request a list. Yeah.
Yeah. In the next few days,
I'm going to be at a NYSONA conference.
You go to the
Sunday
one?
Sunday through Wednesday.
Okay.
So it may be.
Yeah. And you have my email
that.
And yeah. So.
And the membership list is going to be like the folks like me who are members. I'm going to have to ask for membership agencies.
What about the other way to do it is to go back to that list for the solid waste management planning units, because that is on the DEC site, and that might not map 100%,
well,
but
let me
get you like 90%.
Is every agency had to be formed by state law, right? Because if you go to the state law,
this is the designation of the planning unit. So
okay.
That's why I'm saying it's not 100% mapping, but it's, I would be confident in guessing about 90, you know, so you're going to get a lot, and then you can fill in the details.
Yeah, because the enabling legislation for each of the outside agencies is right there on the state law's website. I mean, I was on it the other day looking at Ulster's original enabling legislation, and all the other ones are there. But I hear what you're saying is planning unit.
It's the planning units are any of the following: a county, two or more counties acting jointly, a local government agency or authority established for the purposes of managing solid waste, two or more cities, towns, or villages in combination of them, or a combination of any of the above that DEC determines capable of implementing a regional integrated solid waste management program. There are 69 recognized planning units in the state, and then they list them.
How many? 69?
I'm not sure it's going to track so directly.
I think you can get like 90%.
Why are there 69 planning units if there's only 64 counties?
Some are not counties. Some are cities. Some are joint. Well, Mark, whatever you can provide will certainly be helpful. And I can go through, I can start going through that list and searching and finding where it's going.
That was driving me crazy. I was trying to find their GIS. And I'm like, why is it kind of weird? It was Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. So, excuse me a second here. Liz is saying Manna wants to call in. Is
so
there
anybody?
Somebody who...
She's doing right here. Or we can
she
call her.
She doesn't participate at all. She can't say a word.
Oh, she can't?
No, because this is an open meeting.
Oh, I thought she
noticed her location.
Well, she can't vote.
She can't vote, but can't she?
No, you can't participate either. You can't, yeah, that's the law. That's the law.
And she knows she can at least listen because she said, "And can you guys call
she
me on the speakerphone and I can at least listen?"
Yeah.
So,
start with none. Right. I can try to do that. What's her number?
Trying to call it up, man.
Doug Meyer.
I'm gonna do it. I gotta go to my car. contact.
845-807.
Somebody fell.
1270.
I think it'll have to be somebody, so I don't know if that's...
Well, Amanda knows how this works, so...
70.
It doesn't matter how she gets in, so...
We're sorry. Your call did not go through.
She's calling me.
Oh, there you go. That's why it didn't go through.
Hi, Matt. No. We're trying to call you.
Did you do one? Because now it's got... So, 845-807.
Yeah, we're trying to call you, so why don't we hang up and then...
1270.
1270. But she's got to hang up first.
Okay, let me make sure that's what I...
So I'm going to say, well, I'm not going to text her because then she'll be reading her text instead.
Well, she was the one who asked to move.
Yeah.
I'm a little frustrated.
807-1270.
I'm sure she's much more
frustrated. She's much more frustrated.
Thank you. Okay. I'm just listening.
Okay, thanks, Amanda.
Okay, so...
So, we were discussing the makeup of the UCRA board and kicking around various ideas and...
I'm sorry, but I don't hear anyone talking at all.
Okay.
Now's that testing?
You have to mute on your side, Amanda.
It's breaking up a little, but I'll make do. Thank you.
Okay, Amanda, you've got to mute it on your end, though.
Mute it on your
Not intentionally.
No, he's saying you have to mute it because we're getting a lot of feedback in the room.
Back in the room.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, you just need to mute your microphone so you can hear us, but not.
She did. Yeah. She did. It's not,
okay.
No feedback.
Yep. We got it now. Great. So Mark is going to be attending a conference starting on Sunday, and he's going to try to get us information regarding the planning units for waste throughout the state, so we can look at models of what other either agencies or municipal, whether it be county or a private agency or a city or villages, of how their boards are made up. And that will help us a lot in our review, we think. So, does anybody have any other suggestions for ideas about, or do you want to wait until we get that information?
Well, let's just recap for the benefit of Amanda.
Yeah.
You suggested a 7-member board with 3 legislative appointments, 2 from the executive, 1 from the supervisors association, and a 7th that we haven't decided the origin of.
Although I like your idea of the city of Kingston being that 7th. I like that a lot.
So that's 7 in total or 7 additional?
7 in total.
7.
Totally rework of... And that was just a suggestion for a starter discussion. That was not a something that I was just throwing it out there for feedback. So, yeah, Trace.
Yeah, Trace.
Yeah.
And they are a member of the Supervisors Association.
Oh,
the
they
city
are.
Of Kingston.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Good.
It's all of it's made up of all the city, all the municipal officials, the chief municipal official of every city, village, and town.
Yeah, and when I thought of it, I'm just thinking where a lot of the waste is coming from, and I haven't looked at the figures, so I don't know how Kingston.
They are the number one. Mm. I can tell you that. Yeah. Because town of Rochester was always two or three, depending on, it was usually Kingston, Saugerties, and then Rochester, depending on which type of material you were talking about, whether it was MSW or recycling, in most cases. And Wawarsing was, and usually it's the larger regional geographic areas that, you know, some of the, even some of the more populous towns that are smaller areas, they have more subdivisions and they have more people who do private pickup. So that's why you get the more rural areas that have more use of the facilities. Mark?
Just a thought that in order to not disrupt the current board, you could give 5 legislative appointments and then go up to a 9-member board and then just add these other 4. So you could add 2. I mean, also just from my historical perspective of the legislature, they're going to want to retain typically a majority of the appointments. So if you're only saying 3 legislative appointments, because again, going back to Tracy's comments about the budget and it being that. So if you had 5 and had 2 executive appointments, 1 from the towns, and then, I mean, one thought would be instead of what you were saying, having the executive have 1, you could have the 8 appointed members appoint a 9th. I've seen some boards do something like that. So you could have the 8 get together and appoint a 9th member.
Four to four tie.
Yeah, but yeah,
but I mean, it's an idea.
It would be a bigger majority.
My feeling on that, though, is part of what we're trying to fix is things, you know, it is currently working, but historically it has worked less. So I understand that the legislature would want to keep 5 appointments, but that doesn't necessarily. So, and I look at it as if there's 2 executive and 3 legislative appointments, ultimately the executive is the manager of the budget. You know, the Department of Finance is managing the budget. Yes, the legislature has the power of approval of payments and things, and ultimately the approval over the budget. But the budget is as much the executive's as it is the legislature. So you've already got the 5 there. That's just a thought. And you could give the supervisors 2 seats, but I don't think there's going to be a lot of support for that. And you know, so. And any other thoughts on the makeup of the board and where we go, or do we want to wait until we get this information? And
I'm interested in the information.
Yeah, I think we kind of need that first. So.
There is a thought that floated into my head to keep the current board and phase in new members. So, I tend to agree with that, because otherwise it gets very tricky.
Yeah, it does. I would hope that the in the appointment process, obviously the current board members could apply, and I would hope that would weigh into it. I think, you know, making it mandatory that happen, or you can do a transition whereas those members move up as their terms end, then it goes from there. But because if you're doing a staggered term of appointments with new, which positions get filled when is the question. You almost have to just sort of draw a line in the sand and say all the current board members have the ability to apply if they want to. And hopefully there would be some recognition of that. Just like we're assuming that the legislature isn't going to shoot down the executive's appointments, I would hope the legislature would look at continuity. Let me get Tracy in the...
I
I was just going to voice kind of what Tracy just said, yeah. And that
she couldn't voice it.
The enable, like, you have to, it has to get, it doesn't have to get spelled out in this report per se, but it has to get spelled out in the enabling legislation, the makeup, the terms,
yeah,
how they're appointed, because yeah, that's what it's, it would all be amending what's currently there, so yeah, it will be drawn.
And I think this is going to be, you know, one of our more strident recommendations and findings to the legislature. I mean, there's a number that we've talked about, the fact that maximum diversion needs to happen, and there's some that are just sort of, this is a key piece of our report back, is this is what this body, meaning this group of seven people, is recommending to the legislature to enact. And I think because of the legislation, you could change the makeup, but it still has to be, it stops and starts.
Doesn't it have to go back to the state?
Yes.
It does.
So that alone right there will cause several months, if not years, of delay. Probably not years.
No,
but
not probably not years. No.
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 It could happen this year. That could happen this year.
If they have a special session.
Don't they have it? Wouldn't it be like a home rule request where it has to pass through two separate bodies of the state legislature? I thought that they took it up by one and then it had to be then taken up the next year.
And that's what I mean. If there's no special session this year, then they're going to...
No, I think it could be sponsored by either... There could be a Senate bill and an Assembly bill.
Yeah, but they still
Whether
have to vote on it, right? There still has to be a session called, and they have to go back maybe in November after the election. They might do that. But so then, if that would be ideal. I mean, if they did it in November and could do it again in the next session.
Right. Well, bear in mind, the legislature has to decide what they're going to do first,
right.
And that's
what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I was saying maybe
yeah,
a couple of years, because if they
don't
get to it.
I don't think it's a couple of years.
I hope not. Yeah. No, I hope not, but I could see it happening.
Can I ask for, just while we're talking about research, the latest update, the biennial from UCRA? Can you circulate that? I didn't see it on the website yet.
Yeah, so the DEC, unrequested by us, has now moved permanently those deadlines, and so we have not submitted anything yet, and so it'll be submitted in October.
Do you have a draft?
We have a draft
circulated
that will be significantly probably changed, but we can look at circulating a draft.
Did they change their reporting requirements too? Because the one time you spoke, it was like you thought it would be approved at the next board meeting, I thought.
That was before, well, it doesn't get approved by the agency board. We had shared an update and asked for comments to the agency board, and I think we received one comment back from Andrew. And then as we were getting ready to submit, the DEC sent out a letter, which I think it probably sent to all agencies, changing that something happened in the regulations that changed the reporting requirements to October.
Okay.
I think they don't want it early because they have a set amount of time to approve, respond back. So they have asked us not to submit it to October, which to me gives us an opportunity to improve it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I have to confess, I haven't read it very closely. So I'm glad we have the extra time.
Okay, so we have about 15 minutes left here today. I wanted to just sort of start to talk about the draft report. Jim, thank you for what you did. What I asked Liz to circulate, and it's there's copies of it here, was basically what I dealt with was the establishment and history of the committee, which is pretty straightforward. Then I went into the establishment and history of the UCRA, and I freely admit it's a cut and paste from their website of their history, with a couple paragraphs removed. And then I put in our working bullet points of the sections in introduction, the sections of diversion, the sections on disposal, the intergovernmental relations, which Comptroller Gallagher indicated that she would work on that section on the contract for us. And then the section on economics, which I thought we should, I didn't know if we wanted to talk about that a little bit more in depth today or if we want to hold off on that. But and then Jim was very helpful and sort of took some very good statistics into the beginnings of a diversion section. So I just wanted some feedback on, is this the direction we want our final report to go? Are there things people like about it, hate about it, in between about? I just wanted, you know, I didn't want to spend a lot of time trying to put something together and then have everybody go, no, this isn't what I think it should be. So I'm just looking for some feedback. And it's, admittedly, it's very generalized right now. But in terms of the makeup of the sections, I just was looking for some feedback.
Well, I generally think we're on the right track with what you've been doing lately.
Okay.
And I'm glad you found the materials diversion. That is a draft. Like, I put pay-as-you-throw pricing first as a recommendation, just to bring attention to it. Not that it's necessarily something we adopted, but I found the argument in the, I believe it was in the ZWIP, or the, maybe it was the RIF plan, but I think it was the ZWIP, where they talked about implement unit-based pricing to incentivize communities. So, but other than that,
yeah,
but that's just kind of a small segment. What, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but what we get is that a major part of our solid waste is from the transfer station?
Mostly it's from the haulers. I don't know the exact
that's what I mean.
If I remember right, it was about 15%, 15 roughly.
About 11% recycling.
The haulers, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The haulers charge, and their charges have been going up, which probably, if tipping fees continue to go up and the haulers' costs continue to go up, more people would go to the transfer stations and monitor as much garbage as they're doing. But I just don't, no one's ever explained to me how it would work in a county like this.
Well, they said there's 10,000 communities or something that have adopted that, so maybe we can, I'll see if I can run down some of that and see if there's any.
It would be very interesting if they're not municipal pickup, because the only place I've ever lived that had pay-as-you-throw with tags was definitely municipal pickup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the thing about haulers is the more rural an area is, the pricier it's going to be, because obviously there's fuel cost for the haulers. I mean, right now, I use my transfer station. My fiance has a pickup. She pays a monthly charge, whether she puts one thing out or she puts, you know, once a week they pick up her garbage and her recycling, whatever happens to be in that can, it's the same price. So those prices are averaged out in, you know, in their pricing model. I'm sure there's some people that the can is full every week, and there's other people that they don't even put the can out, and everything in between.
And just thinking about it for a second, it's kind of more that, first of all, they're doing volume, not weight. Right. And then, you know, you know that when you go to sign a contract that you're not paying double for the next size up container than you are for the smaller right. one. They get you to kind of upsize, you know, because it's again that marginal cost when they have to look at staffing, fuel, truck, all those other things versus the tipping fee that they're, you know, per pound that they're paying at ACRA. So, you know, they would have to change their pricing scheme so that it was then rolled into the base price right. and then, you know, kind of doubling it almost, okay. you know, for the next size up. But again, it burdens those who are just looking for minimal service
right.
because then you're carrying all the costs of the toter, the truck, the gas, the,
right.
you know, everything else.
Well, the difference is the transfer stations, I know most of the supervisors, we strive to break even. I mean, I constantly, when I was supervisor, was looking at the cost of operating the transfer station versus the amount of money revenue taken in, and I was always looking for those to be a break-even prospect. I'm not going to sit here and say that every supervisor looks at that, but like when the tipping fee went up for this year, we looked and said, do we need to increase our charge? And we decided, no, we could absorb it. And, you know, and I think most supervisors do look at that. I'm not going to say every supervisor does. But the different model is the private haulers are trying to make a profit of some kind. That's their, otherwise they wouldn't be in business. And the transfer stations are trying to break even. But it's the a lot of people are willing to pay the money for the convenience of having to just drag their toter out to the curb and have somebody pick it up rather than put the bag in your car, drive it to the transfer station. So,
well, I can tell you a funny story about the complications. So we use county waste, and I live in Newport off Springtown Road, and they come for us on Monday. And across the yard, maybe 200 yards, but sharing a driveway in a U-shape, is our neighbor's house. And they get their garbage picked up by County Waste on Tuesday. And I called them. I said, what the heck? What's going on? And they said, our truck comes from, down here. And their truck comes from Cairo. Like, their Cairo bureau, Cairo, New York, runs my neighbor's pickup. And ours is run by a different arm of the thing. And they won't. I'm like, we could save a lot of gas and a lot of trouble and a lot of money. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've told them this two or three times, but it's still, we get picked up on Monday and they get picked up on
yeah.
Tuesday. So I understand there are a lot of complications, but I wanted to put this in play just because
yeah.
the, you know, there is a positive. If we could somehow work this in, you know, when New York raised the price of water, water use went down drastically. You know, it's simple economics. So, you know, there may not be a way to pull it off. Sorry? Right,
yeah.
And I think before we were to raise the tipping fee, we would have to have viable, a really good network of ways people could, like curbside
yeah.
composting collection or some,
yeah.
you know, we would have to set up a system that gave them incentive, or gave them easy alternatives so that they don't just throw in the woods.
Well, that's where, that's where the diversion, like
right.
the transfer stations, I believe the majority of them, general recyclables, they don't charge for them because they're not being charged. We absorb, in Rochester, we absorb the cost of the pickups that we pay in our permit fees, in our generalized permit to use the transfer station. The haulers, clearly, ultimately, they are charging for the recycling because they're charging for the pickup. I mean, there's a cost involved. And I don't know the answer, but I think it's probably mandatory that they have a recycling container and a waste container. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
The haulers.
Yeah.
But
the
they
haulers.
Don't.
So they're not charging, but they
us.
Are charging.
They because they don't bring it to us, so there is right. a cost for them. Like County Waste built a $30 million MRF,
right?
So recycling's not part of
yep.
flow control.
Right.
They're not bringing it to us for free like the towns
right.
get for free, so. And when it comes to commercial, the haulers are obligated to offer the recycling service, but it's not obligated to have the separate
bins. They can do what they want.
Provide a dumpster, and it's on the businesses, if they don't choose the hauler service for recycling, to have a plan to still recycle.
Okay.
And one more thing, if I may.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of talk at the RRA meetings for the last couple of years. The haulers, people have watched the haulers dump, you know, come and pick the trash and then take the recyclables and dump them in the same truck.
Right.
And the haulers say, oh no, we have bins in the truck that do
separating,
whether that's true or not.
It's not. There's no way it can physically work. So that brings up one thing that we've touched on but haven't really unpacked is, do we consider making a recommendation to the legislature of mandatory flow control of all recycling? I mean, that would be, to me, one of our biggest recommendations. Either we either make it or we don't make it, but we've touched on it. I think we should try to put that on our agenda for next meeting to have a really in-depth conversation about should that be one of our recommendations or not, because that would be a major change.
So that's included in Jim's comments. Maybe we can, at the next meeting, in depth for Jim's document.
Yeah.
And if I could make a request to the agency in preparation of that conversation to talk about, you know, just like a very rough... You just mentioned County Waste MRF in Albany, which some staff in the county visited this week along with the MRF at UCRA. What would, you know, real ballpark, what would an upgraded MRF, like a price tag? You know, you just said $30 million, but that's servicing all their district,
their,
all their,
yeah, right,
you know, their volume. So what would one look like at Ulster to, in order to service, if there were flow control? That was my other question while we were kind of thinking through this, was when you look at the, you know, 140,000 tons of MSW and somewhere around 17,000 tons of recycling, albeit recycling is lighter, do you have a sense of what the full diversion is that also goes to the private MRFs for the county?
I mean, they are required to submit a recycling report that's part of our biennial update, so I can pull those numbers.
Yeah, I would be interested in what the kind of better snapshot is of the volume of recycling, even at the current diversion rates for the county, and then kind of like order of magnitude numbers on MRFs.
And I think in general, Mark, there's some hard data we're going to need from you guys in our report to the legislature, things like that. Like, what is the cost? What is the actual cost of a MRF? Because I think that's something the legislature is going to want to at least have that, the basis of that, in order to have that discussion.
I'm going to be reticent to provide too much because, like, if we look at the estimates that we gave when I was in the executive's office of the Government Operations Center of Elizabeth Manor.
Right.
Like, things change, and so
understood.
I could put very broad ballpark numbers, but like...
Well, that would be helpful, though, because is it $5 million or is it $50 million? I mean, it's a big difference, so...
Right, yeah. I mean...
Tracy?
I don't even know. I'm not even on tape, so I don't even know how accurate reported numbers of recycling tonnage that's leaving the county is. We're not verifying it, like, at all. Not even on the slide. We have no idea. We're just taking that paper and saying,
dumping it.
Yeah. Well, I think,
but also to follow up, you don't know how much more is coming in.
What do you mean?
Because we have two very convenient countywide transfer stations. So we don't know, you know, if somebody's finishing up a route this way, how much from other counties is coming in too.
get some recycling from other counties. Are you talking about waste or recycling?
Both.
Because New Paltz,
both, yeah.
I mean, New Paltz doesn't have
the recycling center,
right? So
he's still taking in leaves from Rockland County, and yeah. So we manage waste from other counties.
Well, that,
we do.
So this kind of goes to what, you know, Jim put this together. What I did is, you know, at Legislator Green's request, I tried to put all these bullet points that I put together are straight out of our minutes. These were the things we discussed on broad categories. And I think we're to the point now where we need to go through that list and say, what gets included in our report and what doesn't? That's the first question. And then the second question is how do we take this information and make it a finding and recommendation to the legislature? So what you're talking about is one of the first things I put in here, Tracy, about the separate, you know, investigate flow control of haulers and the... I'm on page 6 right now about the investigate flow control of haulers. But then the part about the same place, enforcement of existing laws and regulations not currently be administered to the fullest extent. So we need to, that's what you said and that's where that came from, but we need to take these bullet points of what we've said over the last four to 5 months and go, how do we take this and make it our report? And yeah.
Well, two things. I want to, the previous discussion, before we got back into that, I want to raise the idea again of solid waste districts as a possibility that we should consider, and maybe, you know, a hauler for each district. And so it just, we talked about it at the last meeting, and it seemed promising. It seemed like something that might work, creating solid waste districts. So I just want to keep that in the flow of conversation.
Okay. That's easy data to get. Like I can tell you in Rochester how many permits we issue every year, and we know how many residential and commercially occupied properties there are in our town. So in Rochester, it's about 50 to 55% of the population that uses the transfer station. Whereas if you looked at it more. True.
So I have the permit so that I can go to my recycling. And there's lots
okay.
of people.
Good point.
Too.
Yeah, good point. Some people might have, you're right, some people might only use the permit for recycling. I hadn't thought about that. So.
Districts is a good idea, but some of the downside is potentially it pushes the smaller haulers out. When New Paltz had gone out to bid, one of the more local, I think he was from Rosendale, but it virtually cut his customer base in half. It did help because it was also written in that you can either contract under this certain RFP amount with County Waste, or you can go to the transfer station. So we did see an increase in our permits. But, you know, I do worry about the smaller hauler. And once you push them all out of the county, in future years, does that mean then the bigger haulers have an opportunity to increase their costs? Also, with haulers, you know, it's not supposed to be any collusion, but you may find that only one hauler You know, they've already divvied up the area, so you may only get from one hauler. Yeah.
Mark.
Sorry, this is, I just wanted to jump back. So out of our 142,000 tons of MSW that we got last year, 14,000 tons came from all of the towns.
So 10%.
Yes. Wow. Because they recycle more at our transfer stations.
And just to add on to Laura's point a little bit, not add on, but just to go off of that, I mean, a lot of the problems that I have just seen have been from some of the smaller haulers, where, like, the smaller haulers are the ones that go out and buy a budget truck and are throwing all the waste into the back of the budget truck. Like, I've seen that because that was collected at my house until I canceled. And I won't discuss the business here, but, like, that is my concern. And over time, if regulations or other things grow, yes, you might see some of the smaller haulers go out.
Mark, of that remaining 90%, is there any way, and I don't know that there is a way, to identify how much of that is larger institutional users versus residential users? I don't think, because you don't know where it's coming from when you get it. If it comes in the truck from a hauler, you don't know if it came from SUNY New Paltz is a bad example, but you don't know if it came from a large institution or if it came from a bunch of residences. There's no way to know that.
I only really know by hauler.
Yeah.
I mean, I know because I have the numbers per hauler. I don't have, like, who are
the
clients.
The reason I bring that up is only residents can use transfer stations.
Correct. Right.
The businesses can't. The farmers can't.
Yeah.
So that's no surprise to me that it is a low percentage, but I thought it was a little bit higher, but because they can't, you know, because of the volume of the amount of waste a larger producer is going to have compared to a residence with one can a week. So.
Chairman. And I'll forward this to Lisette. I think I already forwarded it to the environment, but this is just the hauler's report, and it goes way back, but it also has the towns. It's just a report that we do every year.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I think
we have it, but it certainly wouldn't hurt to have it again in case.
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking if the committee wants, I can take the disposal section that you've outlined here and do the same sort of thing I did with the dispersal, mm-hmm. I mean with the diversion thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just rough out a rough draft and start putting some paragraphs in two bullet points.
What I was going to do, if the committee is okay, between now and the next meeting, is take Jim's and sort of combine it with my bullet points and... Yeah, we're to the point now where a lot of these things we've discussed, and now we need to get more specific of the questions I was asking. Do they make our report? Just because we've talked about it doesn't mean it has to be in our report. So that's the first question. Does it even make our report? And then the second is, what do we say about it, and what is our recommendation and finding? Because I agree with 100% with Tracy that the existing laws are not being followed and administered, and I think that needs to be one of our major findings. Mm-hmm. And the same with diversion of items maximized in as many ways as possible. I mean, I think that's a no-brainer. I think we all agree we need to divert as much as we can out of the waste stream. And, you know, the three things that we've talked about are the zero waste program, the food waste composting, and the Reuse Innovation Center as being three sort of overarching things, but then you've got things like the C&D, the plastic bags, and much more specific. And so what we have to decide is how specific do we want our report to be, and what do we want to say?
Well, I would think that we want to avoid making specific recommendations about materials necessarily. I think because then we're running into, you know, that we're encroaching on the RRA for one thing. You know, we have to make those decisions.
Right.
I think overarching recommendations are good, but for specific materials, I would get down to a level of micromanaging that I don't think this committee has the time or the resources to get into.
Unless the only caveat I would say, if it involves legislation from the state level, like things like include, you know, the bottle bill, including
including
all plastic types of bottles. To me, that's a very specific thing, but I think that's a recommendation we can make to say the legislature has to advocate to the state to adopt that.
Right. But to say, well, you know, this is what we should do with pizza boxes isn't necessarily the charge of this committee.
Agreed. By the way, as a caveat,
I saw that. They said, "Yeah, go ahead and recycle them," and I was like,
"Just as a caveat, I just got in my news feed because I subscribe to some of these things. New York City is now trying a pilot, two locations apparently where people have pizza parties in the park. They now have two locations where you can dispose specifically of your pizza box once you get rid of the little table and the." And because the problem they're finding is they're such a big and bulky container, so they've now made a specific container that receives them, and they're going to swap them out once a day. They're getting that many. I'll share the article. It just came out in my newsfeed yesterday.
Yeah. And in the Washington Post this week, they had a story on you're able to recycle pizza boxes and other materials.
Well, the U.S. Paper Council is telling people you can recycle pizza boxes.
Yeah, but they're not taking them back, are they?
No.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, it's 20 of.
Yes.
So have we set a date? So first of all, I will do the disposal thing.
Okay.
And do the same sort of thing. I don't think we're ready for intergovernmental relations or economics yet. I don't think so.
Well,
we can start with the first two.
March is going to work on the intergovernmental relations with the contract portion of it. There may be some additional that we need to add to it. I would agree with you on both. So what I will try to do between now and the next meeting is take what you put into disposal and work it into my bullet point and go from there.
And what is our next meeting? Have we decided?
We already have. Okay. The next two meetings we're back to Thursdays. So our next meeting is Thursday the 23rd
and
then the 30th, both at 9:30, back to 9:30 here. So next Thursday and the following Thursday. And I will confirm with Kelly which one of those two meetings, hopefully, that they are able to attend. And that may obviously change our agenda for that meeting, because I have a feeling the whole meeting will be dedicated to talking with them. But
just as an additional point, the Recycling Oversight Committee could make recommendations. It would have to go through a process that we'd like to see pizza boxes added in. I guess from this group,
it's just been this urban legend.
I mean, they didn't get really dirty. You don't want contaminated pizza boxes.
It doesn't contaminate.
It doesn't. The percentage is so small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just have to say, when Anna was our executive director, she had some very compelling statistics about how much was rejected. And I'll go back in my emails and dig it out. How many pizza boxes were just unfit and costing, rejected, and that would cost the agency thousands of more dollars to
recycle. They don't recycle. Rockland doesn't do on-site recycling of the cardboard, so she's saying her cardboard loads were sent back.
Yeah, I believe so. I'll have to go and look at my email because I don't remember, but I just remember that recycling pizza boxes was not something that she was in favor of, even though, and you know, we went back and forth a little bit, so I don't know if she's right or not, but I just know.
It drives me wild because I rip them up and I take the greasy spots out and throw them in the compost bin.
Yeah, but
how many people are going to do that? Honestly?
I know.
It's not a big deal.
You take the paper out, you take the little plastic thing out, you rip them up and you throw them in, and then people do it now, and it happens.
Do it all
right?
I would.
And then you get the ones who leave it all in and a couple extra slices of pizza, and they recycle that too.
Yeah. Well, I think that was her point, and
I mean that opens up another whole topic of the cost of recycling versus the environmental importance of recycling. You know, they have to be two separate items. So with that, we'll adjourn, and we will see everybody on Thursday.
Okay. The 23rd and the 30th.
23rd and the 30th. And then if you can look to June, for meeting dates, see if the Thursdays continue to work or people want to do Fridays, whatever they want to do.
Are these useful?
So. Yes, thank you. Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, for the
That's going to be so much fun.
Oh, wow.